Call the first case, please.
Barbara Reeves against J. Curran Trustee, Elijah Taylor Monday, Michael J. Finney, H. M. Lynn Primo, the talent, Michael J. Codman, Michael F. Taylor, for the talent.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Monica Monday and I represent Barbara Beach. I plan on reserving 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is an easement case. The dispositive question on appeal is whether the Torhams have an express easement to a 4-foot private walkway on Beach's property. The trial court held that there was an express easement because the Torhams abutted the private walkway that was on Beach's property and shown on a subdivision plat. In so ruling, the trial court principally relied upon two public right-of-way cases, Ryder versus Patria and Lindsay versus James. The trial court erred for at least two reasons. First, nothing in the 1960 subdivision deed or plat conveyed an express easement to the Torhams in the walk. And second, the Lindsay and Ryder cases do not apply. Now, because the easement issue is dispositive, and the defense of the remaining two assignments of error is largely a procedural one that we have fully briefed, we will focus our argument on the first two assignments of error dealing with the easement and rest on our briefs for the other two issues unless the court has specific questions about them. Now, turning to the question of whether the plat and deed conveyed an express easement to the terms, I do want to clarify first that this is only an express easement case. The Torhams did not seek to prove an easement through any other method, whether by prescription or otherwise. And the court can find that both in the amended complaint as well as statements made by the Torhams' counsel throughout the case. At JA 431, they indicated to the court that they had only pled an express easement claim. Further, their summary judgment motion at page 65 of the joint appendix similarly also only seeks to prove an express easement. And again, the trial court clearly based its decision on the fact that there was an express easement. Now, with that in mind, Virginia law is very clear about what you need for an express easement. It has to be shown from the four corners of the document. It has to be plain from the face of the instrument. And if there is any doubt, it is strictly construed against there being an easement and in favor of private property rights.
Now, Ms. Mundy, to be more specific, do I understand your argument to be that an express easement has to expressly state the burden, but it also has to expressly state the benefit? And your argument, as I take it, is that the burden may very well be expressed if the plat is properly incorporated, but the benefit is not. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. It does look like the plat creates an easement, but it definitely does not state that it is for the benefit of the Torhams. So it is not clear from either the words or anything else on that instrument that the Torhams were to benefit from that easement. That is critical in an express easement case because otherwise, I think we end up perhaps where the trial court did, where then anyone, you can infer. I mean, essentially what the Torhams are asking, because they're asking the court to read into the plat language for their benefit, for the benefit of Lot 510. They're asking the court to infer from what is on the plat that there is an express easement. But because this is an express easement case, the court should not do that.
Well, it may or may not be an implied easement, but that's not before us.
That's correct. And that's why I wanted to start with what had actually been pled.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Before we get too deep into the legal trees, I would like to look briefly at the common sense forest. We have 11 townhouses, numbered 1 through 11. 1 through 9 have access from their backyard directly to a public street by way of the easement, correct?
Yes.
Number 11 has access from its backyard to a public street by way of its side yard.
Correct.
Why, just from a common sense perspective, why would the creator of this townhouse subdivision give 10 out of the 11 townhouses access from their backyard to a public street and exclude house number 10?
Your Honor, it may be because of the level of that yard. That lot, 510, was the only lot where that was 4 feet below the level of the easement. So it was physically different than the others. That's why the stairs were necessary to even access the easement. So there was a difference structurally, physically, to the property itself that might explain what the grantor did. However, all we can go by is what is expressed in that deed in the plat. You know, and again, whether there's an implied easement or something else is not before the court. But expressly, it's not expressed in the controlling instruments.
What significance, if any, is there to the trial judge's letter of the 19th of January that seems to extend the easement all the way to and through Lot 511? Is there any significance to that? Is that just...
Well, yes, Your Honor, and I think that goes to, that goes to our last assignment of error. I mean, it essentially overburdens Ms. Beach's property. It overburdens the easement. It increases the rights, it decides the rights of non-parties, the owners of 511 when they're not before the court, which was not necessary in this private nuisance action. And second, it overburdens the easement. So now...
So you don't think that was a mistake on the part of the trial judge, an inadvertent mistake? You think that was purposeful?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And I don't think that, you know, she clearly had time at that point to correct it. I think, as I recall, that was early on in the case. There was clearly ample time to correct that later on. And really, none of the parties have taken the position that Lot 511 has a right to the easement, and certainly it was not part of the case. But based upon what is in the deed and the plat, we're really in a situation where the terms are asking this court to infer something, not to read something that is expressly on the plat or the deed. And therefore, there is no express easement as evidenced by those documents. Now, so how did the trial court get to its conclusion? That is from applying the Ryder versus Petria and the Lindsay versus James cases. These cases do not establish an express easement. Now, I can't definitively say to the court that they're not express easement cases, but I can say it appears that they are not express easement cases. They are implied easement cases because they're not dependent upon the actual words in the document. Instead, those cases really stand for the proposition that where there has been a failed public dedication of a right-of-way, that a subdivision lot owner has the same rights to private easements of passage over a subdivision right-of-way as they do over streets and alleys that are shown on the plat that are adjacent to their land, but only where there is no language of limitation or restriction in the deed or the plat. So there are several reasons why, and I think these cases stand for a rule. They clearly stand for a rule, but not one that is applicable here for several reasons. First, because there is language of restriction and limitation in our case. In the plat in our case, it clearly placed the easement on certain property only, and it also labeled it as private.
Counsel, is there any significance to the fact that it places it on certain property as opposed to for certain property?
Well, yes, Your Honor. I mean, as I think both parties have agreed that the beach lot benefits from the easement because of that particular language. But in terms of whether that has any implication for Ryder or Lindsay being applied, no. In those cases, the court essentially found that there was a large, wide right-of-way. Essentially, we're talking about streets. We're talking about streets that were intended to be for the public. For various reasons, those dedications were never finalized or achieved. They failed. So what the court said is, well...
But my question really was with regard to your argument that there is language of limitation on this plat, but what it says is that the easement is on...
Correct.
lots 1 through 509, and since 509 is next to 510, why wouldn't it make sense that it's on 509 for the benefit of 510?
Well, Your Honor, because in an express easement setting, that is not clear from the face of the document. I think that would be something the court would have to infer. It is not evident from the face of the document. It would not be evident from the point of view of a reasonable purchaser who would look at the plat and say, okay, there's an easement, but there's nothing on there that indicates that it is for the benefit of 510. It could be, you know, we could just as easily infer that it might be for the benefit of the lot owners on the other side of the easement, or for public utilities, or for someone else who needed to access the easement. But there's nothing indicating that it is for the benefit of 510, and that's why the express easement claim fails. Now, similarly, this was also a private easement, and we think that's very significant as to why Ryder and Lindsay do not apply. Again, in Ryder and Lindsay, in those cases, the streets were intended to be public. They were initially intended to be for the public benefit. Here, this right-of-way was specifically intended to be private. And as we put in our brief, that means exclusively. It's going to be exclusively for them. And so those cases, you cannot extend them there.
Ms. Lundy, your attempt to minimize the impact of Ryder and Lindsay by calling them cases in which there was that issue whether the easements in those subdivisions were public, had been dedicated and accepted, doesn't seem to square with the footnote 2 in the Burdett case. Burdett was an express easement case. It did not involve a subdivision. But in making the ruling in that case, we specifically noted in footnote 2 that this other principle of law dealing in the context of subdivisions was no way impacted by the decision in Burdett. So it seems to me that we have a line of cases that apply a different rule with regard to subdivisions and plats, and where there are on those plats easements that are shown, and especially easements that abut a particular landowner's property. So how do you reconcile your position with what we did and said in Burdett?
I think that footnote, Your Honor, merely indicates that the court was not really ruling on those particular cases, that they were not implicated in that case. That's the way that I viewed that footnote. I mean, I think the court was signaling, we're not addressing those cases. This case should not indicate that those other cases, that Ryder and Lindsay, mean anything less than what they do. But if we were to say that Ryder and Lindsay applied to every subdivision, that would mean that as long as there's an easement in a subdivision and a lot owner abuts it, they have an easement. They have a right to it. That is an extension that I don't think the court intended from these cases. I think that Ryder and Lindsay are narrowly, it's a narrow holding. I don't think it can go so far as to say, as long as there's an easement and you're next to it in a subdivision, that somehow that's going to be different than some other property, particularly when there is a note on the plat that says that it is private and only on certain lots. I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Coughlin. I'm accompanied by my law partner, Michael Kalish, and we're here on behalf of the appellees, Jay and Judith Turner. There are two primary reasons that this court should affirm the trial court and lift the stay of the injunction in this case, therefore requiring the appellant, Ms. Beach, to restore the steps within the easement burdening the property. First, this court has already decided that lot owners like the Turners, whose lot abuts an easement within a subdivision, benefit from such an easement. In fact, in the Ryder case, the court went out of its way to make that the rule of law in Virginia.
Well, are those easements that are recognized under that line of cases, are those easements that are created expressly, or are they created by implication?
They're created expressly in that they're shown on legal instruments. There's, in our case, an expression in the deed itself that easements are created as shown on the plat, and then there's a plat, and all of those lines and words on a plat have meaning. And in fact, that's the court's holding in the Faison case, that when you incorporate a plat into a legal instrument, it becomes a part of the plat. So is there some interpretation that may have to go on? Yes, but that doesn't mean that it's some amorphic easement. It's still an express easement, for lack of a better term. An implied easement arises when essentially you have a defect, if you will, in the conveyance. There was always use of this narrow strip of land by the conveyor. And then, for whatever reason, he leaves that strip of land out of the conveyance, or the right to it out of the conveyance. That's the Brown versus Haley case.
But now, and you just said that it wasn't an implied easement in Lindsay and Ryder. In fact, they were identified in the opinions of the court as implied easements.
I think, and Your Honor, I don't remember that exact language in the case. What I'm trying to point out is that it's very different than an instance where you have an easement by implication, or an easement by necessity, or other easements where you don't have a legal instrument to rely on. Here, let's not forget...
I think you have to remember that the distinction between an express easement and an implied easement is at the heart of this case. And if you obscure the difference in your argument, you're actually not responding to their argument. Their argument, it seems to me, is that there is an express declaration of a burden in this case. There's not an express declaration of a benefit. And in order to fill that void, you have to rely on cases and concepts that fall into the category of implied easements, not express easements. And that, seems to me, is the issue. And there's an overarching question whether or not subdivisions are handled differently. Well, so those are the two questions.
Sure. Well, then let me focus on that point specifically. Taken to its logical conclusion, their argument that we do not benefit from the easement, then no lots benefit from the easement.
Well, they might by implied easement. That's the whole point. See, you're missing her argument. Her argument is that this case is before this court on a concept of express easement, and there isn't one. She's not opining, she's not even making a case as to whether or not there's an implied easement. There might be. But her case is that there is no express easement.
And it is my point, Your Honor, that I'll start by looking at our amended complaint. We pled an easement. During the course of the proceedings, I did state that it is my view that this is an express easement. That remains my view today.
Well,
and
no, you said more than that. You said we're not presenting a claim of an implied easement.
We said we're not presenting a claim for prescriptive easement, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And if I said that, Your Honor, then you know, I'll obviously be held to it. But it is my point before this court that this is an express easement, because you have a plat attached to the deed that has meaning in and of itself. Every instrument has to be interpreted.
Where do you find any expression of benefit?
The easement is on their property.
All right, that's the burden.
Okay.
Where's the expression of benefit?
By the fact that we are next to the lot.
Well, that, now you're into implied easement cases.
I disagree, Your Honor. And the reason is because I think you're, you know, to build on what Justice Mintz was pointing out, I think the law and all of us here would, in a way, be given a bad name if this is not an express easement that is clear on the face of the instrument. Because there is an easement placed on the adjoining lot. The easement abuts our lot. There is clearly a burden on their lot. It would be just simply illogical, and for lack of a better term, to conclude that our lot does not benefit from that easement. I mean, if you look at the definition of an easement, and this is in McCarthy Holdings versus Berger, and many other cases, the servient estate is the estate where the burden is placed on. An easement creates a burden on the servient estate. Clearly, there is a burden on their lot.
And does it benefit 511?
No, and the reason for that is because...
Why did the trial judge say that it extended all the way to 511?
Your Honor, respectfully, that's not what the trial court said. What the trial court pointed out, if you look at the plat itself, there is a line across all of the lots in the subdivision. And that line points to the interior of the easement, if you will. And then there is a note placed on the plat that identifies the lots burdened by the easement.
Let me read you the trial court's decision. He said that the subdivision plat depicts the easement, as abutting or running at the rear of all of the lots created by the deed of subdivision, including lot 510 and lot 511.
And that is, it does depict that, Your Honor. Okay, so if you look at the plat itself.
But see, your argument here today is that there's an implicit, and I underscore implicit because it's implied, there's an implicit benefit to lot 511. Because it runs all the way along the back and includes 511. That's what the trial judge said. But today you're saying that it doesn't benefit 511. And part of the reason why you can't figure it out is there isn't any declaration of benefit in either the deed or the plat.
Other than the fact that it says easements as shown on the
deed. All right. Does it benefit 511?
If Your Honor will let me. It does not, and that's because our lot is not burdened by it. So the note restricts the Servian estates to only those mentioned in the note. And our lot, lot 510, is not mentioned as having an easement on it. And what the trial court was only pointing out, because I pointed this out to the trial court, is that the easement does run across all the lots if that note wasn't there. But then there is the note restricting it. And the trial court went on to then specifically state that our lot is the dominant estate and the beach lot is the Servian estate. And so I don't think that the court was, first of all, adjudicating the rights of third parties because nobody else was before the court. Res judicata doesn't apply. It was really just doing, I think, a good job of looking at the plat, which had two key components to it. The first component is the line work depicting where the easement runs, and then the note identifying which lots are burdened by it.
Counselor?
Yes.
The difficulty might be that your argument sounds best in the court of common sense. And I'll just leave that hanging because I'm not sure whether a court of law always is a court of common sense, not speaking to this one in particular. But your argument is that in terms of the easement at the back of lot 509, there is a Servient estate, obviously. It is, in fact, lot 509. And that lot 510 is the dominant estate. And that if lot 510 is not the dominant estate, then you can't even have an easement without both a Servient and a dominant estate. Would that be correct?
Yes, and then the document then would be meaningless. And therefore, the court would have to write away the notes and in essence, amend it. And that's why I believe it's an express easement, and that's why I'm, arguing that.
To argue that lot 509 has no dominant estate if it's not lot 510, there has to be a presumption that the purpose of the easement is to give everyone access to a public street from their backyard. Common sense would tend to indicate that. But is there any specific evidence at all of that?
Well, there's the plat that shows Gibbons Street at the end of the subdivision, for
yeah,
one.
Again, just looking at it,
yes.
That makes sense.
Yes.
But what if the easement, it could be that the creator of the subdivision simply wanted people to be able to stroll from lot to lot to lot in order to enjoy each other's company. We can't presume the purpose that you indicate, which is you wanted to have public street access, because there's no evidence of that within the record. It makes sense, but it could be that lots 5, 1 through 8, in fact, are the dominant estates of the easement on lot 5, on lot 9.
Well, Your Honor, you're correct in that we couldn't, find the original subdivider, bring him into court, have him state the purpose of the original easement. And I think therefore the role of the court is to interpret the two documents together, which are in writing. There's no sort of other anomalous fact that I think that the court needs other than to just look at the line work on the plats, look at the fact that a deed was expressly granted as shown on the plat, and their lot is burdened by it. And in fact, in the Ryder case, what the
Counselor,
court...
I want you to get to the Ryder case, but while you're talking about anomalous facts, what about your opposing counsel's speculation that that the landscape architecture of the stick of townhouses is what created that, that there's a four-foot drop?
It's factually incorrect in that in the record there should be a photograph, whether we include it in the book or not I don't recall, but there should be a photograph that actually shows a drop between this beach's lot and the elevation of the walkway. Been on the walkway many times, and in fact it is elevated above all of the lots. So everyone had to step up to it. So our lot is not in a unique position from that perspective. Regarding the Ryder case, I mean, what this court said is, in any event, such grantee is entitled to an easement in streets and alleys adjoining his lot. And because this plat was in writing, it was therefore my position, and remains today, that an express easement, in looking at not only that case, but also the way that this plat was drawn out, and that there is expressly a burden on their lot, that our lot benefits from that easement. There are countless instruments in the Commonwealth where an easement is only placed on one lot, but because there's two parties to that instrument, the presumption is, or it's implied, that therefore the other party to the transaction is the dominant estate. Rarely, and our firm drafts these documents all the time, do we necessarily say, and this other lot is the dominant estate. It's so clear in the instrument, and I think that's what we have here. It's just common sense sometimes should not be abandoned, especially when you're looking at subdivision plats, in our view, as clear as it is here, or as clear as they are here. So if there are any further questions on our position on the easement, happy to answer them. I'd like to focus just one second on the I've touched on the necessary parties thing, and then also the zoning issue. In our view, that was a fabricated issue, in that there was never a zoning issue for the last however many years, certainly since 2002. Those steps were there, according to the court. There was never a zoning violation issue. That issue was waived at trial, and that decision of the trial court to determine that issue was waived has not been appealed. And in addition, the court's decision or indecision, if you will, related to the zoning issue is not what's been appealed. What's been placed before this court is for this court for the first time to decide the zoning issue. And I think that that's not the position of this court. I don't also think that it's the position of courts to necessarily decide zoning issues brought, in essence, by private parties. So we don't think that the third assignment of error is properly crafted, properly before this court. And take it to its logical conclusion again, you know, who wouldn't we have to bring in to establish injunctive relief? Should we bring the police in to say that by restoring these steps, other laws are not being broken? We don't think that that's the purpose of the injunction. And, Your Honors, we ask that the injunction be put in place and that the steps be restored. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Counsel, who is the dominant estate of the easement on your client's lot?
Your Honor, I don't know that I can answer that question because it's not a question that I have thought of in connection with this case, so I'm not really sure that I can answer that question.
Is it your position that the plat does not create any express easements at all?
No, Your Honor. We have argued for purposes of this appeal, although it is not essential to this court's determination, as I think that the other side has, that there is an express easement for the beach property. But if there is no express easement for the beach property, then clearly that does not help the term's argument, and they absolutely have no express easement to the property.
But you claim that there is.
We have, both sides have argued that there is for purposes of the appeal.
Counsel. There is an express easement on the beach property, lot 9. There are two possibilities that I can think of for the dominant estate for that easement. Number one is lot 510, so that it can have access to a public street from its backyard. Number two is all of lots 1 through 8, so that they can stroll from yard to yard to yard to yard to say hello to each other.
Stopping at your client's yard,
but not being able to stroll on the Turin's lot. Would you care to offer a? Or never mind.
I think I'm using it at this point. And this was the top on my list, as I want to go back to the grade of the easement. And I mean, it's a good question. Why is that lot treated differently? Their amended complaint, page 16. The elevation of the rear of the Turin property is approximately 4 feet below the grade of the 4-foot private walk easement. I think that is the answer. That's the answer that I can provide to the court from their own pleading.
I understand that, but that does not answer the question about who is the dominant estate over the easement on your lot that we all acknowledge is there.
Well, and Your Honor, because it was not essential for the answering the question of whether they had an express easement, we did not address that.
It seems to me that the fact that all these questions are being raised makes it clear, whatever kind of easement it is an express. There's all this speculation about, well, was it for this reason? Was it for that reason? Did they want to go to a street? Did they want to stroll? Why wasn't it 511? Was it 510? All of those things seem to me support the argument that it is not an express easement. It may be implied. And I thought that was your position.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And the only question before the court is whether the Torums have an express easement. The answer is no, they do not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Call the next case, please.